Chapter 31. James Abrenio stood as Connie Kendall entered the interview room. He waited until her shackles were removed and the guard was gone before he said, "Ryder and Jeff are fine. They've been rescued, and their captors are dead." Her reaction startled him. As she brought her hands to her face, her knees buckled. He rushed forward and got his arms around her before she went all the way to the floor. "Easy, easy, easy," he said. "This is good news." Connie put her arms around his shoulders, pressed her face into his shirt, and sobbed. James shot a nervous look toward the door, fearful of how the guard might react if he saw this kind of personal contact. Then he realized that he didn't care. He repositioned his arms and hugged her in return. They stood like that for the better part of a minute as the emotion poured out of her, soaking his shirt. He thought he understood, but he wasn't sure. She'd lost her husband, thought she'd lost her children, and now the glimmer of good news broke everything loose inside. He decided to hold her until she pushed away. Finally, she did.
"I'm sorry," she said.
He helped her to a bolted-down chair.
"That came from nowhere. I'm so sorry."
"You've been through a lot," James said. He took the seat opposite hers. Connie laughed and pointed.
"Oh, my God," she said. "Your shirt."
He pulled it away from his chest and gave it a look. "It's just water and snot," he said. "I'm sure it'll wash out."
"Tell me about my boys," Connie said.
"That's pretty much all of it," James said. "They were rescued by a team from the FBI. Their kidnappers did not survive the encounter."
"Are Jeff and Ryder okay?"
"Entirely unhurt," James said. "They've been taken to a facility in Virginia, and last I heard, they were sleeping."
"What about emotionally?"
James hedged. "I don't know how to answer that. I'm certain that you'll be able to contact them soon."
"How did that happen? Who found them? How?"
James laughed and pumped the air with his hands. "Whoa, whoa, whoa. All in good time. I don't even know all of those details yet. I just know I have verified that they are safe and sound."
"Who's protecting them?"
"I've got that covered," James said. "Let me show you something." He lifted his soft leather briefcase from the floor and put it on its side on the table. "When I spoke with a U.S. attorney yesterday and withdrew your agreement for immunity, she was not a happy camper. In fact, she essentially threw me out of her office and told me to tell you to get used to the idea of never seeing freedom again." As he spoke, he saw a dreadful cloud form over Connie's features. He was ruining the moment.
"Wait, wait," he said. "There's a happy ending."
He pulled a manila folder out of his briefcase and flipped it open. "What I have here is a new immunity agreement. Full and complete immunity from prosecution. Release from prison and house arrest until your cooperation is complete, and then you're free and clear." Dread transformed to delight.
"What does house arrest mean?"
"Just what it sounds like. Well, not your current house, and there's a witness protection element to it, but it means you can live with your children." She covered her mouth with her hands.
"Effective when?"
"Soon," James said. "As early as tomorrow, no longer than 3 or 4 days." Connie thrust her hands onto her head, her fingers disappearing into the tangle of her hair.
I don't understand. What changed, other than Ryder and Jeff being safe?"
"I convinced them that you have a lot more to offer now than you did yesterday. Turns out that you are the key to uncovering a Chechen terrorist ring, and you can help identify the supply chain for a flow of chemical weapons into the United States." Her expression of happiness dimmed.
"The cartels are not going to just sit by and let me testify. They're going to come after me."
"Uncle Sam is making a big offer, Connie. You can't expect it to be free of charge.
Would it help to know that the marshals have never lost a WITSEC participant?
He opened the immunity offer to the back page and handed her a pen from his suit coat pocket. The sooner you sign, the sooner you'll see your boys.
Can I take a few minutes to read it?
Of course, James said through a smile. Just don't even try to change a word of it. The shootout in the Washington metro system made national news. It seemed that Kassan and Aslan Kadyrov were wanted for the murders of three men in Blanton, Tennessee, in an argument over a methamphetamine lab they were running out of an outbuilding. They were tracked to Washington, and when the FBI moved in to make an arrest, the brothers opened fire and were killed. Some stills released from the metro's security cameras showed the final confrontation. The agents' faces were blurred, however. According to a Justice Department spokesman who got FaceTime almost every week on the news networks, the rumors of backpacks filled with chemical weapons proved to be false. Yes, the Kadyrov brothers had backpacks that they discarded, but they contained only drug paraphernalia. The backpacks were treated as hazardous materials, nonetheless.
"Can you mute that, please?" Jonathan asked.
The security solutions team sat around the teak table in the war room. Benice clicked the remote, and the screen went silent.
"You know that's all a lie, right?" Jonathan asked. "A buddy of mine down at Bluegrass Army Depot in Kentucky told me Uncle Sam disarmed those two devices and shipped the active ingredients out to them. Drug paraphernalia, my ass."
"What? You want us to take credit?" Gale asked.
"Of course not," Jonathan said. "But nothing about that report was true, other than the dead bodies. They make lying look so easy."
"Here's the best part," Boxer said. "If a reporter gets too close to the truth, they'll be labeled conspiracy theorists. I think the system works perfectly."
"Did you notice the blurred faces?" Benice asked. "Yours in particular?"
"I did," Jonathan said. "That was good work. Thank you."
"That wasn't my good work," Benice said. "That was Derek's good work. He was able to program the NSA facial recognition program to automatically recognize and blur your features. Boxer's and Gale, too. Even mine, for whatever reason. Until someone recognizes the change and fixes it, you never have to worry about being inadvertently photographed."
Jonathan saw the pain in her face as she remembered Derek.
"He was a good man," he said. "I should have been nicer to him."
"What's the deal with Harry Dawkins now?"
Benice asked.
"Is he joining the team or not?"
"For now, he wants to have his cake and eat it, too. He's only a few years away from a government pension, but he says he'll try to be here if we need him."
"I want to say something," Gale said. "For the record, we did the right thing going after the Kadyrovs. We had a responsibility to act on the special information we had."
Jonathan and Boxers exchanged looks.
"Okay.
Just promise me we'll never do something like that again."
This has been a Highbridge production. Read by Basil Sands. Copyright 2020 by John Gilstrap, Incorporated. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. Recording copyright 2020 by Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books.